Good afternoon. I'd like to call the legacy meeting to order and welcome everybody. We've got a full agenda, so we just kind of want to get hopping. Apologies to the public because that are here. Some members are going to be coming and going. We have many layers of commitments and bills up. It's a very active time of session, so if some of the seats are emptied, please don't take it as a lack of interest or that sort of thing. Matter of fact, to that point, we're members. I just kind of want to bring something to everybody's attention. We're a little bit, as chair, I'm feeling a little bit overloved. We have a lot of friends and a lot of interest. I just want to kind of show you what's kind of come across my desk. I'm going to bring a prop here. It's not really a prop. I just want to show you a stack of requests that we have and some of the dilemma that we're going to face as we go down this journey together with the legacy amendment. And quite honestly, most of this is in one fund, and it just happens to be the not the smallest fund, but close to it. The 19.75% goes to arts and cultural heritage, and much of these efforts are a request for that area of the fund. And so I just wanted to kind of show you the reality of the challenge ahead of us as we try to get to a governor's signature. With that,
sure.
I hate to be negative, but I just want to say that I would really strongly encourage members to just as we, I don't usually bring up the Senate, but I really challenge you to bring up bills in the Senate as well, because if you're successful on that side and have it placed in the legacy bill in the Senate, it'd make our journey, or your journey, if you will, much easier on both bills. Representative Green.
Well, I was going to say, Mr. Chair, that I saw you coming down here with that big stack of books, and I almost offered to help you carry them, but I didn't want people to talk. But I, now that I know what they are, I can probably help you get them back to your office, and maybe we can whittle them down a little bit.
Thank you, Representative Green. There's been a lot of advice of how to get to those final numbers, and but we do have a bit of a challenge, and I'm sorry to start with that, but it's exciting. I mean, we have a lot of interest and a lot of interest in the money that's there. So thank you. That I don't know if anybody's had an opportunity to look at the minutes. Representative Hausman, have you had an opportunity to look at our February 27th?
I did, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to move them.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Representative Hausman. Any questions to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? With that, the minutes from the February 27th meeting are approved. Representative Hausman, if you'd like.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I will move House File 1337, and to save you time, I will simply invite my testifiers to come to the table and let them do the speaking, and we'll save a little time here.
Okay. Thank you.
Knowing I've already had one meeting this morning. We were pressed, and so wherever I can cut a few minutes. So we have two testifiers who will describe House File 1337.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. So Representative Hausman has moved that House File 1337 be laid over for possible inclusion. So with that, we have the bill before us, and we have some testifiers. Please state your name and go ahead when you're ready, and welcome.
Yep, good afternoon. My name is Joan Wolshire. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Disability. You have to bear with me. I'm squeakier today than normal. And with me also is my Legislative Director, Cody Olson. The Council on Disability, just last year we celebrated 45 years as being a state agency. And we exist primarily to advise the governor, state legislature, state agencies, and the public regarding disability issues. And our mission, when you're looking at what it is, what do we do? We advocate for policies and programs for the public and private sectors that advance the rights of Minnesotans with disabilities. So we cover a lot of different topics that way. But today, we're here because of achievements and contributions of Minnesotans with disabilities. They are so bountiful in Minnesota, yet many of them are unheard. And so we wanted to do something about that. Civil rights for people with disabilities in this nation have made tremendous progress the past several decades. And many of those important battles are on the national stage. And many of those people on the stage are from Minnesota. The Minnesota Council on Disability presents a legacy funding proposal in order to capture the legacy of these Minnesotans with disabilities, to celebrate our progress and to really secure our future as well. The council seeks funding in order to capture our legacy of Minnesotans with disabilities by producing and distributing high-quality, diverse content of Minnesota's rich civil history and civil rights, to celebrate our progress by hosting cultural events with our community for the 29th and 30th anniversary of the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And this should also help us in securing our future by promoting constructive dialogue aimed to end the stigma of hiring people with disabilities in the professional environment. The ultimate goal of this proposal is for Minnesotans with disabilities to find themselves in a welcome culture that embraces their talents and capabilities in competitive employment and paths. But before we get into that and have Cody explain that program, we've got, did you hand out the little postcards? Nope, we don't have those. We have some wonderful postcards, but we weren't able to get those quite yet, depicting individuals telling their story. And then we've got a 90-second ad promo that we worked with Ampers. Cody, are you able to pull that up?
Yeah. So so we've had a successful partnership
Mr.
in the
Olson,
past. I'm sorry. Thank
could
you.
Could you please introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Cody Olson. I'm the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. And in the past, we've had a successful partnership where we've been able to capture stories of Minnesotans with disabilities and highlight the aim of that proposal was to create understanding and mutual respect and have the audience look past a person's disability. So we brought one story with us today, and this is a story of a Minnesotan whose name was Master Hinkle. And I would introduce him, but I would rather have his 90-second segment speak for himself.
That makes it really hard for disabled people to make friends with able-bodied people, because that's always in the back of your mind. You're like, I don't want to be the reason they can't go in somewhere.
This is Keep Moving Forward.
Let the shameful wall of exclusion finally come tumbling down.
Exploring the legacy and promise of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
I'm Master Hinkle, I'm 30 years old. And I have a spinal cord injury. I've been in a wheelchair since I was about 3 years old. Deep down, up under all the metal and straps and everything, we're just people that want to do things that people get to do. I can't tell you how many times I've had to pretend to be sick because there's an insurmountable set of stairs. I had to pretend to be sick just so my friends wouldn't feel bad for having to leave. That's one of the biggest things I'd like to change in the world. I think if enough people see people in wheelchairs out and about living their lives, it could change the perception. But it's really hard if you never get to see them because they can't get into the places you are.
Keep Moving Forward is supported by the Minnesota Council on Disability, the Minnesota Humanities Center, and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Online at ampers.org.
That makes it really hard.
So these were stories that we shared around the state of Minnesota in our partnership with Ampers. These were 90-second clips that played on radio segments around the state, and it was just sharing very deep, very human stories of these Minnesotans with disabilities, and that's what made that campaign so successful. We captured those deeply personal stories and we distributed them through multimedia content, from video to audio to postcards and photography. And so that's what we're hoping to capture with a different proposal, is sharing the human element of disability. And as Joe mentioned, there are three components to the proposal that we put forward. First, we aim to capture our legacy, because Minnesotans really were at the forefront of the national disability civil rights movement, and we want to find those folks who sacrificed so much for the freedoms that are enjoyed by Minnesotans with disabilities today. These shared stories of significant achievement should be heard by all, and they should be shared in different formats, from video to audio to photography and print. Content that we produce will nurture and inspire Minnesotans in a permanent exhibit, which will be displayed on the on disability history. And I want to stress that this is an urgent and time-sensitive matter, because these leaders who are responsible for defining the civil rights for an entire generation of Americans with disabilities are passing on. We're all familiar with and we reflect on the recent death of former President George H.W. Bush, who signed the Americans with Disabilities Act in 1990. Here in Minnesota, we remember Kathy Wingen, who died last month. She is a disability civil rights leader and described by people around her as tenacious and a pioneer. And because of Kathy's efforts, we see a more inclusive city of St. Cloud. Residents can thank Kathy every time they use a curb cut or get to work through dial-a-ride. Stories like Kathy's are exactly what we hope to capture through these proposals. In your packet is a wonderful news article about celebrating the life and legacy of Kathy, and I encourage you on your own time to read through that brief story when you have a chance to. The second component, we hope to celebrate our progress by hosting cultural events in 2019 and 2020 to recognize the 20th and 30th anniversary of the landmark civil rights legislation, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And this will be a time for our community to convene and to recognize all that's been accomplished in the national disability civil rights movement, to reflect on the sacrifices made to enjoy the freedoms that we have, and to organize our next step. Our event hopes to engage with the Minnesota disability community, advocates, and public members to foster knowledge of the ADA, its impact on our modern world, and generate greater understanding on the many rights afforded by it. And finally, we hope to positively influence the culture of Minnesota's professional environment by educating and informing employers on the benefits of hiring people with disabilities. In the United States, the unemployment rate for people with disabilities is 10.5%. And here in Minnesota, it's actually twice that. People on the autism spectrum have significantly higher employment rates that range from 70 to 90%. And a lot of this is because of employment discrimination and the stigma of disability in the culture of the professional world. Through this legacy proposal, the Council on Disability hopes to build dialogue to end the discrimination that is pervasive among hiring Minnesotans with disabilities. We aim to shift the conversation from what is the expense of hiring a person with a disability to what is the value of including people with disabilities in our workforce. The full details and itemized budget can be found in your packets. We are excited to present this proposal and look forward to working with the committee members and stakeholders on this project. Thank you for your time today, and we'll be happy to answer any questions that members have.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. I really appreciate the video you showed us. I believe Representative Erdahl used to have arms like that. It's been a while, though, I think. He says he's quite the basketball player. But Representative Green.
Thank you. I just have a couple of questions. I know we see a lot of programs coming out for Legacy, and they're good programs, just like yours. But a lot of it sure seems to be eaten up in administrative costs and maybe some duplication from other projects. Do you guys ever work across the aisles with other agencies and combine efforts to put these things together and maybe try to save some costs and get more money into the real projects instead of the administration?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Wilshire.
members, Representative Green, absolutely. We're such a teeny agency, and it's a teeny budget to go with that. We absolutely have to. And so this is a project we will definitely be working with, I'm sure, with the Human Rights Department. It fits right in with working with them. And we certainly try to look at avenues when we're doing these projects, a video taping and what have you. We try to look at the agencies that have that type of capability to partner with them on that as well. So,
Representative Green.
Thank you. And then, you know, it is a pretty small ask compared to most of them. Do you, let's say there was more funding available through other parts of the legacy bill to you, could you handle more, or are you at your limit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, well, one never wants to refuse additional appropriations. However, definitely we have the capability through the SMART, small agency resource team that we work with for helping managing HR and budget. So we've got additional help. So that that's fabulous for us when we're looking to handle additional funds that may come in, whether it's through grant writing, through appropriations, et cetera.
Thank you. Any further questions from the members? Mr. Hughes has additional comments, I think, that to the bill. And Mr. Hughes, we see around the Capitol quite a bit. And he lives here. As he's coming forward, I just want to mention just how much I appreciate using the ampers and the. If I think that we've all received a copy of some of the ampers, those 90-second things. I've played them on my CD in my car, and they're really quite amazing. Just a variety of talents and different things that are going around our state. I've listened to like two different segments of them, and they're really quite amazing, from Beatles stories to all sorts of different things. But anyways, Mr. Hughes.
Members of the committee, Chair Leon Lilly, my name is Mark Hughes, and I spent 12 years on the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities, and it's a while ago now, but it was like a college education. But I can tell you, I still keep in the background kind of and kind of watch what's going on. And, you know, the hands of time move on, and we all join the disability club somehow, and I don't wish it on anybody. But then you're going to need an organization like this. And what bothers me in government is it's a well-managed organization, the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities. It has a small budget, and it needs to have more staff people, because as our population grows, there will be more people using this. And the tool, every tool that's out there should be afforded to them. So I hope you take a good look at this proposal, and I hope you put it through, because Joan Wilshire has done a fabulous job over there. She's got some great people. But it bothers me that even here at the state of Minnesota, people don't know what the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities is. And we want the governor to work with them so his people can stay more aware. We have to get in touch with Nora Slawick, the chair of the Med Council. That's pretty important, because our transportation is not running well right this moment. But that's some of the things that they look at there. And so this is a pretty important organization. So please, vote for this proposal, and let's get passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes, and thank you for being around the Capitol and advocating on so many issues.
You're welcome.
Any questions related to this bill? Any final comments? Chair Hausman, or
just Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing the bill.
Okay, so thank you.
Thank
you very much for coming. With that, seeing no more discussion, and then Representative Hausman renews her motion that House File 1337 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
With that, it's laid over. Thank you. So we're going to change the agenda just briefly. Sorry, Representative Brand, Representative Mahoney needs to be at a so the people that are coming up to testify with Representative Mahoney, if you could come up, and then Representative Mahoney's right out in the hallway, so we'll we'll get to that. While they're coming forward, I just want to off topic a little bit. We have the my staff and our team is doing the hockey for the tournament, so you should be able to get one game right because I think there's a game going on already. That's I imagine my vice chair is going to probably pick Wiper Lake to go all the way through.
They're
getting hilarious, which they never do. Right. So I would hope you would consider. I'm going to buy pizza. There's in typical Democrat style. There's no losers. So and and so there'll be pizza and then a trophy. So.
For everybody?
Not a trophy.
Oh.
Not that bad. Representative Mahoney, I'd like to move your bill that House File 13, wait, wrong one, 1613 is laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Mahoney, welcome to the Legacy Committee, and please,
thank you,
please
Mr.
begin
Chair.
When you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I brought some testifiers with me to talk about the fundraising, the master plan, and the cultural work that we've done with both the Hmong and the Chinese community.
I would have. Mr. Chair, we're having a hockey battle here. I don't know why Representative Murphy chose not to do one for the women. I don't know. We should have. Hermantown Proctor did pretty well.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I know this is your committee.
Yes, sir.
But what's wrong with you? Are you got broken hands or something? You can't take care of this for Representative Murphy? She's great, but she's busy too.
Right. You apparently know. It was an extreme oversight.
I have another bill in her committee also.
Right. Representative Heitzman.
How do I keep this going?
Mr. Chair, committee members.
Representative Murphy, or Mahoney.
This is a bill for a request for $500,000. For something called the Chinese Garden in the city of St. Paul in Lake Phelan Keller Regional Park. As you can see in front here, I got these actually framed up today so they would be appropriate for this particular committee. I'm going to give you a little history and then ask my testifiers to come up relatively quickly here. This plan started about 8 years ago when we realized that it had been almost 40 years since the master plan had been redone or looked at in Phelan Keller Regional Park. And we put together a whole brand new master plan for Phelan Park, which had not had any real work done in it since the early 70s. It's a lovely park, 700 acres, big lake, two golf courses, a variety of other things, but it doesn't have the things that could entertain young people, young kids. We turned on the waterfall again, and this was about 10 years ago, and the chair understands how lovely that is, a wonderful piece and adds to the lake as people wander around it. We made upgrades in the park in terms of the building to bring it in, because we are now at well over 1 million visitors per year. 1 million people stop in that park and walk around that lake every year. We upgraded the buildings in the park. We did water work in the channel to make sure that we would cut down on lily pads and the green stuff that sits on top, and that was all. That's all been working really, really well. We brought in a splash pad for the kids. Today, I'm here talking about the Chinese Garden. We have a sister city ship with a city, Changsha, in Hunan province, and we've had that for about 30 or 40 years, and there's always been a gift laying there or waiting there for us. It's a pavilion that is about 500 years old in that particular city, which also happens to have been one of the stops along the way that the Hmong have spent a lot of time, their ancestors spent a lot of time, and there's now about 7 million in Changsha in the area. And this is a very famous pavilion in Changsha. They did a replica as a gift to us, well over $1 million or $2 worth of a gift for the city of St. Paul. We did just looking for a place to put it. So that went into our master plan. And in the last 4 years, we've started working on that 5 years. We've got a couple of the people who have worked on the cultural side of it, bringing together Hmong ideas and Chinese ideas, because this is a more of a hybrid than a pure Chinese garden. I've toured two or three of them around the country now. The park said, we'd love to have it, we just don't have the money, go fundraise. So we raised the first $1 million. And I'm not sure if you can see on that picture the stone landscaping, but you can likely see the pavilion. The pavilion is absolutely gorgeous, beautifully hand-painted. It was built over in Changsha, taken apart, shipped over to the Twin Cities, it's to St. Paul here, and then painstakingly put back together. This is I had no idea it was going to be this stunningly beautiful. Now we need to finish the rest of it. The Chinese have the pavilion. We have a gate. Now, this is for the Hmong cultural wall. It's about 2,000 square feet. It's got three or four sections of wall on it that talk about from their history several hundred years ago when they were chased out of China by the Chinese and went to live in Laos. It's got a couple of boards it's supposed to have a couple of boards or a part of the wall, life in Laos, life in America, and life today. And that's what we're doing here. We're trying to put all this together. This is not the full cost of this. We'll have to go out and fundraise for that particular again. But I think we need to have both the Chinese piece and the Hmong piece to make sure that we're walking through this together. So with that, I'd like to bring up Bill Zytek and a couple of the others to talk briefly about how we've raised their money and how we've worked together to come up with a gorgeous addition to the Phelan Keller Regional Park. And maybe I'll be back a couple of years down the road for another piece or two. I got to get a restaurant in there when I'm walking around. I got to have a cup of coffee.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. It's an amazing effort that you're doing here, and it's really neat what's going on there. That there's some great history in that park with the a couple of years ago they had the Winter Carnival. I think it was on the island right there, and had the ice castle and other things. But no, really, thank you very much for doing this. And you know, over 1 million visitors, that's incredible. Go ahead, sir. Sorry to interrupt. Please state your name. And
yeah, my name is William Zytek, and I'm the treasurer of the Minnesota China Friendship Garden Society. Society was formed back in 2005, and their goal was to bring sister city gardens to both Minneapolis and St. Paul, and luckily they ran into trouble trying to do it in Minneapolis. So then they turned to St. Paul and were able to get the concept of a China garden into the master plan. And that's when I became aware of it, because I live in the area and I was on the district council. And back in 2014, I called a community engagement meeting to talk about that aspect of the master plan. And Representative Mahoney showed up along with about 30 other people. And the next year, we were able to get $50,000 of legacy money from this committee. We took that. We hired an architect from Changsha. We hired Parks and Rec, essentially. And we were able to put together a design for a garden. And once we had that design, we could go to the community. We could go to funders. We raised over $1 million with the help of a lot of friends. And this gift, as Tim said, is also worth nearly $1 million, perhaps more. It's hard to know. And it was installed this summer. So if you haven't been over there to see it, that's what it looks like. It's good in the winter or the summer, although most would probably prefer the summer. Right now we're leaning into finishing phase one, which is to put up the gate that goes with this pavilion. The Hmong Heritage Wall is already up. What we're looking at next is the Hmong Cultural Plaza and extending the front yard of the garden down to the moat. And so this this ask is primarily for the Hmong Cultural Plaza, and I'll let some of the other folks speak.
Thank you, sir. Representative Mahoney, I don't know if you want to introduce the next person, or
Okay. Go ahead. Hello, my name is Kang Yang Wang. I'm a resident on East Side St. Paul, and I'm also a board member of the China Garden, and I'm Hmong. So Hmong has a long history back in China 5,000 years ago, but in the early 1800s, the Hmong have been migrated to Southeast Asia, where they also helped the American CIA back in 1975 and ended up here in the U.S. Now, there are over 80,000 Hmong living in Minnesota, majority living in St. Paul. So St. Paul has been coined as the capital of the Hmong of the nation. So a lot of Hmong community, you know, go to Lake Fallon every day on the summer. If you go there on the evening or in the afternoon, you'll see a lot of, you know, Hmong people in there. And by having a Hmong cultural plaza at the park, that tells about our history, our beautiful history, long history back in China. That would be a great idea. And people love it. We have been talking to a lot of community members in the area. And they said this is a beautiful idea. This is a good idea that reflect our history, our culture. We have a you know, very beautiful culture in terms of, you know, when you go to Hmong New Year, you know, we have a lot of beautiful culture through dance, you know, arts and so on, right? So also funeral, wedding ceremonies, we will go there and do our wedding, stuff like that. So when people talk about the idea of having a cultural plaza right on East Side, where the heart of the Hmong community live in, and people love this idea. We have been raising funding for this, but we, at this bill, I would support, you know, to have some funding from this Art and Culture Committee to help out with the Hmong Cultural Plaza. And that is next to the Chinese Pavilion, which is also a beautiful pavilion from China. And Changsha is also the ancestral homeland of the Hmong people back about 5,000 years ago.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wang.
Hi.
Sorry. Please state your name for the record.
Sure. My name is Chen Zhou. I'm the advisory board chair for the Chinese community and also a board member. I guess I want to thank the committee for listening to us, and also for Tim Mahoney to bring this legislation to it. I want to echo what Bill said, our secretary, that whatever Minneapolis lost, it's St. Paul's gain. It's truly a gain. I want to speak to the art history and also the how the pavilion and the garden is bringing people together. First of all, this piece of art, the pavilion itself, is considered the top four pavilion in throughout all China. It's the it was originally built like 400 years ago. One of the person who is responsible for bringing it over is the artist that's doing the meditation sculpture over there, and also the sculptor that did the Martin Luther King sculpture in Washington D.C. So I'm very proud to have a Chinese sculptor that was able to do a civic leader, you know, of a very important. When we were got this project together, when I first got involved, I was very surprised. Linda, our president, is a good friend of mine. And looking at the group, I see Linda, I see Bill and Romy, our officers, you know, pretty much all white people. Nothing against white people. We're doing Chinese garden here. But they are the most dedicated person that I met that's, you know, getting the project done. And that's how I find, you know, my brothers and Bill and also my Hmong brother and Jeff, that really putting together something that bring people together. I remember when we were doing the project over there, we have a Latino person coming to me, want to talk to me about what all the symbols on there means. And I had people walking, a lady walking dog is looking at it, it is like, why is it oriented this way? Why does all the structure the way it is? I have people come to me and say, hey, how do you sign up so we can have a wedding over here? You know, it's just a piece of a, it's just a piece of a art that people doesn't need to really explain. They just find awe, and they just want to see how do we best use it. So I think that's what keeps us going. We have a very small group, but we love to be able to get everybody involved. And I think that's what St. Paul symbolized. You know, our mayor was supporting us, and he's fourth generation African American. And I'm Chinese. I'm not really from St. Paul. I apologize for that. But Jeff and everybody else here, you know, it's such a diversified group, and everybody just want to see this happen. And speaking of my community, when my community really got involved about 2 years ago, during the Christmas and New Year time, we had about over a couple thousand people through grassroots donated close to $100,000. And consider Christmas and New Year, not a whole lot of people are really in, you know, here. But to see older people and younger kids want to just give that dollar, $10, just want to see this happen, and that just bring people together. So I think, you know, it's not just art, it's also bring people together, and that's why I'm doing this. And thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, sir. I'm glad you mentioned that the sculpture that exists here now. It's an amazing piece if you ever get a chance to get over there and look at it. And it was done by the same person that did the Martin Luther King one on the in Washington, D.C. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It was an amazing sculpture over in the Washington, D.C. as well. If you ever get a chance, it's a, I think, a three-story high, all granite, and it's just a beautiful piece of work.
Thank you. Yeah, that was beautiful.
The sculptor is Master Lei Yixin.
Thank you, sir. Representative Mahoney, would you like to introduce your next testifier?
I would love to introduce my my next witness, Romy.
Shall I just...
Yeah, just go
just
ahead.
Just try and explain. Okay. I'm a neighbor at the park, and I'm a community arts activist, which means I'm retired and doing what I want, working all the time without being paid. And because of my passion about this project, I've become a board member of the China Friendship Garden Society, which is, by the way, a ragtag group of volunteers. Nobody is paid, and nobody is connected to big money. So we have been working very hard to get the money that we've raised so far.
Just 1 second. Could you just say your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Romy, R-O-M-I, Slowiak, S-L-O-W-I-A-K.
Thank you very much. Sorry.
Romy, short for Rosemary. Okay, so what I want to talk to you about is really what excites me about the project. When I first heard that this China Garden was going to happen, I thought, nah, how's this going to work? Then I found out that the Hmong are from China, and I said, okay, I am in. This is all about cultural education. This is all about understanding, forgiveness, cooperation. This is cool. This is like the landmark public art project of my life. I'll do whatever. So I just want to explain to you one of the events that is going to come up and start to bring the arts into Phelan Park. We are going to have the grand opening of this garden on the 13th of July as part of the Dragon Festival. And you all probably know about the Dragon Festival or you've been there. But what I'm finding out, and many of us, is that this is a very interesting, complex Chinese story. And it has something for everyone. It's about an actual person, Chu Yuan. He was a loyal minister to the king. This is way before China was China. He tries to broker an alliance to save his state. He's slandered by opponents. He's sent into exile. In the countryside, he becomes a beloved activist poet. Then his state loses and is under other hands. So he's very depressed. He walks into the river. He is drowning. The beloved neighbors and townspeople come out in boats, try to save him, and also throw packets of rice in the water so that the fish will not eat his body. So this is what the Dragon Boat Race is about. And the interesting thing to me is that this actually took place in the Chu state of China back before B.C. So this actually took place in the Hmong part of China, which is where our sister city is. So we're going to convene Hmong historians, Chinese historians. We're going to look at poems, dances, stories that relate to this and try and bring them alive at the grand opening. So this will just be the first part of a real collaboration of arts groups around this story. And it'll just be the beginning of many, many such events. I'm so happy to be a part of it and so glad that Tim is here to get some real money because we're out.
Well, thank you very much for your words. Perhaps this committee could put together a team for the Dragon Boat races. A couple of years ago, I participated with a business, and we had a team. And
I volunteer to steer.
You can steer. Representative Zhongshan, you can help us put together a team. And I think we could actually do pretty well. It was an amazing event. It's actually quite a bit of work. And anyways, we got beat by a team from Hormel down in Austin, Minnesota. And I think they were fed Spam burgers or something. So anyways, we came in second place, probably.
Pretty good.
And Mr. Chair, that's actually part of what I wanted to end
Chair
with.
Chair Mahoney.
Is that the Chinese Garden is a cultural cultural issue, an art issue, but it's also an economic issue for us. We have 10, 20 of the largest companies in the state participating in the Dragon Boat races as teams. And they get many of their executives over to the east side, which we wouldn't have them any other reason to be over there than to participate in the Dragon Boat races. We also have a very healthy trade with China, and this is a place that we can bring people from Changsha and some of the other places to feel more at home. And hopefully they invest in I would like them to invest in the east side, but I'm sure they'll be much more magnanimous than just me.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. We have a couple questions. So Representative Erdahl, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real quick, and if Ms. Romy would come back.
He's harmless.
Thank you. I don't know if I can sleep tonight. I don't know if I can sleep tonight, Mr. Chairman, if I don't get the answer to this. So what happened to the guy that walked out into the lake or river to drown?
Well, you know, I'm actually going to find out because I'm learning about this, too. I'm going to have dinner with Jeff and Chen, who you heard from, on Monday night, and I'm going to find out more about this legend and more about the details. This is really a cultural education project. I believe he didn't make it. He's now a hero.
You'll announce that at the grand opening when you show up.
Yes, you have to be there to find out how it really happened. We may bring him back.
Thank you. Just want to make sure the fish didn't get them.
Well, again, thank you very much for coming today and telling your story. It's an amazing project, and as Representative Mahoney knows, I kind of grew up on the north end of Phelan. My mom had a business there at the St. Paul Tourist Cabins and Motel, and so we spent a lot of time there on Phelan. But I love the use that's going on, and I can confirm that you have over a million visitors. I mean, it's well-loved, like many of our trails around the state and parks. So Representative Mahoney, thank you very much for coming and the testifiers. And again, Representative Zhang is going to lead our team into victory, I'm hoping. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. With that, I move that House File 1613 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chairman, how many are
Representative Erdahl?
How many are in a dragon boat?
Mr. Chair, it's an odd number because you have a director or a chair. They have a title, but so it's. I'm guessing it's like 17. I think there's 8 on each side and quite a few. It's a maybe.
16 of us, just like you.
A drummer and then they provide the steer.
Oh, so one in the back as well.
So that's provided with the boat because they don't trust anyone to do that.
Representative Heitzman has a canoe in his office, so I think he has some expertise. Representative Heitzman.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. It doesn't look going in the boat.
So Welcome to, we're bringing up our House File 1305. Thank you. I lost track. Representative Brand, welcome.
Thank you.
I'd like to move that House File 1305 be laid over for possible inclusion. So with that, we have your bill before us. Representative Brand, welcome, and thank you very much for coming. And sorry we moved the agenda a little bit, but I'm sure you'll understand. And go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for allowing me to be here today. I'm excited to talk a little bit about county fairs.
I have one.
Of course, we all know there's 95 county fairs across the state of Minnesota, and each of us have them in our counties. And they do a lot of great things for arts and culture, but also for ag production and, you know, cultural heritage as well. And so part of the reason why I'm here today is to support this for 20 and 21 for some arts and culture heritage funding from the Commissioner of Agriculture for this particular, for the county fairs, the 95 county fairs across our state. And so I've got a couple of folks with me today that also wish to testify on behalf of this. And so I'll throw this over to AJ, and he can start.
Representative, no, demote you. Mr. Dewar, please state your name and go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing House Bill 1305 today, and thank you, Representative Brand, for bringing it forward. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Andrew Dewar, and I represent the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs. And I'm just going to briefly talk a little bit about the organization and the history of legacy funds to the county fairs, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Skopansky and Mr. Miller to talk about the great things that county fairs are doing with these funds and why it's important not only to the county fairs but to the state of Minnesota. The Federation of County Fairs were a statewide organization representing, as Representative Brand said, the 95 county fairs in the state. As every county has a county fair. But as you can probably figure out, some have multiple. I know Representative Murphy, St. Louis County has two. And it tends to be the larger geographic counties that will have a couple just to, you know, to cut down on travel time. I know Polk, Otter Tail, and some others have multiple county fairs. And county fairs, I think it's important when we're talking about state funding is county fairs are there's a whole chapter in state statute on county fairs, Chapter 13. They're granted their powers and given their authority in state statute. Chapter 13 says that each county shall have a county ag society, and that county ag society shall hold a county fair every year. Some of the history, I should step back and say that since working with the county fairs, I've visited quite a few, probably over, you know, a dozen, 15 or so, and one of the exciting things about the county fairs are just how diverse they are in scale and in scope. And you have some great small fairs, some great large fairs, and everywhere in between. Steele County is huge. It's been compared to the state fair. I know Mr. Skopansky in Benton County has a very large fair. But some of the smaller, rural, less populated counties have small fairs. We have them in the metro area. I know, you know, like Ramsey County is a smaller fair, but a great fair. Mr. Chair, I've seen you there, so I know you visited the Ramsey County Fair. But what one thing I like about House File 1305 is its direct grants spread equally across each county fair, and that means that the funds that if included in the bill you sent out will literally hit every corner of this of the state. It'll be invested in each county in the state of Minnesota. Some of the history of the funding back in 2011 when the legacy amendment was new. County fairs actually had about $2.8 million over the biennium of legacy funds for promoting arts, cultural heritage, and history. And I went back and I listened to the testimony to that bill in 2011, and it was just as I said. It was a way for the committee to spread that arts and history and cultural heritage money out to every corner of the state. And unfortunately, that fund has. You know, the legacy portion of the fund, it was split up between, I won't get into the details, between agriculture budget and the legacy budget. But the legacy portion fell off for a couple of bienniums. But thankfully, in 2017, with your support, Mr. Chair, and with the previous chair, Representative Gunther's support, we were able to get some of those funds back. And at our annual meeting, I have to say, I had multiple people come up to me and say, you know, thank you and the legislature for doing that because We're able to bring back all these local artists and musicians and these historical exhibits that that we weren't able to fund the two previous bienniums. So with that, I want to turn it over to the other testifiers and, unless there's any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dewar. Go ahead, sir, and state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready.
Case. My name is Joe Skopansky. I'm from the Benton County Fair. I feel after JJ talked, I'm like Garrison Keillor. I can throw my papers on the floor now. I've been a past member of the Minnesota County of Association of Fairs. And like AJ said, there's 90 fairs over 87 counties. What I like about this is that it's spread evenly over the whole part of the state. These funds help sustain the Legacy and Heritage program at their events, and the Legacy and the Heritage actually are synonymous. I've been to over 50 fairs, and I can attest that the funds are crucial to continue this type of programming. Usually in the rural areas, they celebrate their traditions, their heritage, and their legacy. Ag societies in Minnesota started actually before statehood, back in, let's tell Chairman Lilly that his county is celebrating their birthday today, 167 years. He's actually number two. Benton County beat him out by one day. And that was with the help of Oliver Kelly, which you guys know about, probably the Oliver Kelly farm that's closer to Elk River. He was instrumental in putting us organizations together. Some of the things that these fairs do with the public, their audiences, is carding and coloring of wool to make clothing, bee farming and honey production, the pollinators, music, ethnic, Civil War, Americana, World War II, history of agricultural products, how they advanced, new uses and future uses, horticultural training, history of Minnesota barns, buildings, windmills, farm equipment, courthouses, Civil War, and life of famous Americans such as Teddy Roosevelt or Abraham Lincoln, and pioneer life presentations. I myself, because I did travel the state quite a bit, I have seen the interaction between the presenters and the audience, the questions and answers from the crowd, the audience becoming part of the presentation, the elderly sharing their stories and experiences, and then the conversation begins. And the young listen, asking questions, and in the future they will have the experience and stories to tell in their communities with their legacy. If you haven't gone to a county fair, please do so. Even in the larger areas of the Twin Cities, Rochester, Duluth, all these bigger urban areas do have a county fair. County fairs are a sense to show a sense of pride, of engagement, entertainment, and education. And over 95% of the county fair boards are volunteers and receive no compensation, a commitment to sustain the fair's legacy in the future. Our predecessors will always convey to the next generation. As leaders, we have the ability every day to build a legacy that lasts and makes a difference long after we're gone. And to know where we are going, we have to know where we have been. I am asking on behalf of all Minnesota fairs for your continued support on funding from the Legacy Committee. Thank you. Any questions, please?
Thank you, Mr. Skopansky. You're actually quite humble, too. He's also on another kind of famous fair. He's on the State Fair Board, I believe, and one that we all know and love.
And Mr. Chairman, and injury to insult, I just joined the Minnesota Arts Board. So I'm a glutton for punishment, but I told my wife 3 more years and I'll be over that 70 mark and I'm done volunteering. Let's pass it on.
thank you, sir. Thank you for your, might have opened a can of worms there. Representative Heitzman.
I had just 2 questions. Now I have about 5. But we'll start with the first 2, Mr. Chair, if that's okay.
Representative Heitzman.
We hadn't really talked a lot yet about what is done with the money, and I was just wondering if you might be able to give some examples. And then I also had another question. I think earlier we had heard a number of different legacy committee chairs mentioned, and I was wondering for my second question, who was chair, if someone might recall, when the legacy began funding our county fairs. Does anybody know?
Maybe Mr. Doerr might have some thoughts on that. I thought he did kind of mention. I thought you did.
I'm hoping he knows the answer. Might have been question.
Someone sitting very close to you. I believe it was.
We won't leave anybody out.
Was it Representative Ergall? Or
I don't think so.
We don't know for certain. Representative Heitzman. It could be you have two of them in the room here, and I think it was a tie. They Representative Murphy and Representative Erdahl, I believe.
It was Torkelson's bill.
It was Torkelson? Okay. I know they're funded through the ag bill now, and then they're funded through the Gunther, like that was mentioned. Representative Gunther had, or Chair Gunther at the time, had in his, and then also in the ag bill. Last year had some funding for our county fairs. Last cycle was that?
That was the first or second.
That was not first. That was just last cycle. So what was your? Sorry, we don't have an answer to your question. Oh, we do. Staff, our stars. Okay. Well, Representative Heitzman.
They're working on that. Well, the first part of my question was, of course, some examples of what is done with the money at our county fair.
And maybe Mr. Doerr can come back and answer that in
a little bit
in a second.
That's okay. Wait then.
Vice Chair Wazalek, would you like to ask a question? You had a question?
Yeah, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Mr. Doerr mentioned that there was a point when this was taken, there was not legacy money for this, and I know part of legacy is that it's supposed to supplement, not supplant. So I'm wondering if you could maybe talk a little bit about what this looked like when there wasn't legacy money.
Mr. Doerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe I can answer both questions at once. So to kind of, I didn't want to go into too much detail with the history of the funding, but so in 2011 there was $2.8 million of legacy funds for arts, cultural heritage, and history, what the fund is for. And it was it all went to the county fairs, about half of that, so $1.4 million over the biennium, was in direct grants to each fair, and about half of it was competitive grants. And then the 2013 bill, there was a discussion. It would primarily happen in the Senate to free up some arts funds to split that fund up between the ag budget and the legacy funds. The agriculture portion made it into the bill. The legacy portion did not. So in the 2013 and 2015 biennium, there were no legacy funds that went to county fairs. Maybe even answer partially at least Representative Heintzman's question, it just means that a lot of those local bands, those historical exhibits, local artists that are brought in to either show their art or to put on art classes and demonstrations, those things just didn't happen during those years. I heard from many county fairs with the funding that was restored, I don't know if I restored is the right word, but brought back last biennium, that there's a lot of excitement among the county fairs that a lot of that was able to come back for the last 2 years.
Any further questions? Representative Green, I think we're going to kind of mix it up and go with the questions, and then we'll go to you, Mr. Miller, in a few seconds. We have one more question over here, too. But Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Kind of running the Wild West here.
Okay, but this is... This is to the author of the bill, and on line 1.14, it says, and 1.13, the commissioner must seek input from all interested parties. Do you have a list of all the interested parties that they're seeking input from?
What numbers for that? Sorry, I didn't.
It's the last line of the bill.
1.13, okay.
Representative Brand or Mr. Doerr?
Yeah, I would defer to Mr. Doerr on this one, sorry.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, I guess we took this language from previous legacy bills. I guess my guess would be is that it's that the input must be sought from, or the grants must be sought from each of the 95 county fairs, but maybe staff could help me with that.
Chair and members, I'm not sure where that language came from. I didn't draft this year's bill, But probably it did come from a previous appropriation, and I don't know who all the interested parties are.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. It was, just to help a little bit, it was drafted in the Senate. I believe they did pick up in previous years, but I don't know the answer, Representative Green.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, some of the other questions I had have been answered, so I won't belabor those, but might not be a bad idea to get that figured out.
Thank you. I think they've, I see a lot of nods, so I think they've heard you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to continue with the Vice Chair's question on supplanting and what directions are sent out by the fair to the fairs about how the money can be spent.
Mr. Dewar.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I'm not sure. The funds are, if they're grants, the grants are submitted to the Department of Agriculture, and the Department of Agriculture makes the determination on if they meet the requirements that the funds are being used as the legacy funds are intended to for projects that, as you said, are not supplementing, but for arts, history, and cultural heritage. The Department of Agriculture also does the agriculture grants, and those are for the promotion of agriculture. So they're definitely two different funds with different parameters, and it's the other than the language of the bill and in the legacy amendment, it's a determination of the Department of Agriculture of whether the grant application is denied or accepted.
Well, and
Representative Murphy,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dewar, you work for the Federation of County Fairs, right? And that's a position.
Mr. Dewar, one of those.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent the Federation of the County Fairs here, yep.
And so this money is something that you think is great. And so does your Federation of County Fairs follow up with any kind of instructions about that the money should not be spent or supplanting? Now, as far as I know about county fairs, there's always been ribbons, blue ribbons and purple ribbons, red ribbons, white ribbons, and people are very proud when they receive those ribbons. And I've heard that fairs are using the money for the ribbons, and that would be supplanting. And I would oppose that. But I've also heard the excellent presentation of how you have true life stories and you have history and you have presentations that you never had before at the county fair. And you have reenactments at the county fair and those kind of things. And I would strongly support that. And that would be additions, and that would be the intent of how the money should be spent and what the Constitution says how the money should be spent. So, and I think there was once a report about how it was questionable about whether we were supplanting or not. And I just wouldn't want us to get into any trouble about supplanting. So I think we have to make sure that people understand that the money has some ties to it, that it's supposed to be for new stuff and art and heritage and culture.
Thank you, Mr. Dewar.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy, I can clear up at least one thing as far as the idea that the funds are used for ribbons. It's definitely not that. There are funds that are called premium funds. That's also in the ag budget. That's used for, so that none of the funds that come through the legacy committee are used for ribbons or anything like that. It's all overseen by the Department of Agriculture, and they have a person dedicated to that it's used for the intended purposes, and it is a parameter that it doesn't supplant, just like you said.
Thank you, Representative Murphy, and I believe they've heard you.
And, Mr. Chair, mini donuts are part of our culture.
I would agree. We're past, so I don't want to, Mr. Miller, we're going to give you a few seconds here at the end, but, okay. So, Mr. Miller, please, we're about 5 minutes already over, so I feel really bad, but please introduce yourself and go ahead real quick.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bruce Miller with the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm happy to be here today with Representative Brand in support of House File 1305. Legacy funds are an important piece of our county fairs and being used to enhance the arts access, education, culture, and if you've attended county fairs, you see the impact of these funds as they're used for demonstrations, for interactive activities, for arts, for culture, of all kinds of things. Minnesota's county fairs for 167 years have been the heart and soul of many of our county rural areas. They were celebrations of agriculture, where farmers came together at harvest time and exchanged information, exchanged bragging rights. And now as we become further and further removed as a Minnesota from rural areas, most people no longer have a direct connection to anybody that farms or anybody on a farm. And these county fairs continue to play a role where we make those community connections between agriculture and people not engaged in agriculture. And the use of arts, of music, to bring people together and to really enhance that celebration are just critically important. Minnesota Farmers Union is happy and to once again support funding of this kind, and we look forward to working with county fairs. I have been receiving calls from county fairs over the last 6 months talking specifically about legacy grant funds and asking for ideas, and would we work with them to help them really meet the guidelines of enhancing arts access, education, history, and make them as interactive as we can. And some of them know me from my film work, and so I've been working with them on ideas for really using new media. And the exciting part is the use of social media at the county fairs to help celebrate and get a further reach. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I will stop and thank the committee and urge your support for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Miller, telling about the county fairs. And, again, you have another story. I love your coffee at the state fair. I know Mr. Chairman, I think I'm one of the millions that are buying it. Mr. Miller.
I'll slide off of county fairs to the state fair, which is where the culmination of all of these county fairs are. That's where the kids that are at the county fairs bring their animals to show. They come up through this process of county fairs and get to the state fair. A year ago, the Minnesota State Fair challenged Farmers Union to really start doing more with telling our story, and we wanted to rebrand ourselves. We produced three films, which I will make available to anybody on the committee, that talk about agriculture, talk about local food, and talk about the history of Farmers Union and in Minnesota. I will make those available to the chair. And I think the coffee is incredible, but those bacon, lettuce, tomato sandwiches on kerns of bread have to top everything. I don't know how many thousands we sold. So thank you, sir.
Thank you. Your final comment actually saved, I think Representative Erdahl was going to mention that sandwich. But thank you very much for coming, everyone. And definitely blessed by our county fairs and very much appreciate it. With that, the chair renews the motion that House File 1305 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Brand.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So, Representative Erdahl?
This one.
Yeah.
Taking too many folders with me. I need this.
The final bill we have for consideration today is HF 1489. Representative Erdahl, would you like to move your bill for possible inclusion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'd like to move 149. No, it's not. 149. Thank you. for likely, or excuse me, possible inclusion in the legacy bill.
Representative Erdahl moves that House File 1489 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Erdahl, if you want to tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm going to let these folks do most of the telling. This is a bill that we have regularly done here in the Legacy Committee, dealing with the preservation of Dakota and Ojibwe languages and the preservation of our graves. So with that, with the recollection that this does have a long history with the Legacy Committee, I will move the presentation on to starting with Mr. Fairbanks.
Mr. Fairbanks, if you could state your name for the record and then begin your testimony.
Bonjour, Anine. Edward Fairbanks. I am the interim executive director of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, that I'm a pillager and a Bear Clan member. Right up to my mother's passing, I kept asking her why I looked different than the rest of the family. I kept bringing up the milkman, and she kept denying it, and so that's where we're at right now. In the interest of time, Madam Chair and Council, we've provided you a PowerPoint, and I'd like to go right to the two significant matters that we wish to address. And thank you, Representative Erdahl, for asking us. Let's go right. While we're doing that, the Indian Affairs Council has 11 tribal nations. We have two representatives from the House. We have two Senate representatives, and 11 or 12, I believe, I think it's 12 commissioners that sit on our board. Sorry, I thought we should have stopped at the fax machine. This picture demonstrates the difference between the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council and the Office of State Archaeologist and the commonality of the two offices. And we do work very, very close with the Office of the State Archaeologist. The matter that we're speaking in front of the committee today is seeking funds to continue an incredibly important part of Indian Affairs' service to the state of Minnesota, to the counties, to the cities, but more important to the Native Americans that are unintentionally unearthed during construction projects. Indian Affairs is responsible to manage, oversee, and protect American Indian cemeteries and is the sole authority to recover and rebury American Indian remains. These projects occur on private lands involved in multiple land jurisdictions, including tribes, cities, counties, state, and federal, plus private lands. With the funds that received the last biennium, we, Indian Affairs, worked with Hamline University and constructed the one and only tribal osteology lab. One of the important things that we do in the osteology lab is to determine if they're Native American and to work with the tribes and determining how many bodies are actually displaced in a construction project. If you take Highway 23 near Duluth, we have about a half a mile of human remains that spread over that entire project. The lab is, with the funds, we were able to not only create but become in compliance with the federal regulations. With this lab, it's a targeted lab to work towards timely analysis and to assist in cultural appropriate testing. Some tribes do not mind having invasive testing. Many tribes prefer not to have invasive testing, but we still need to determine if they're native, if they're juvenile, male, female, adult. Through consultation with the tribes, Indian Affairs works to repatriate and rebury. In 1989, the burial program of the state of Minnesota Indian Affairs became the holder or the protector of thousands of Native American remains. In that, we have, in our new expanded capacity, those NACRA grants, or those NACRA cases, currently right now, those that haven't been repatriated, occupy almost 80% of our total repository. One of them is what we call the membranes, which were people from the Southwest that were dug up by the University of Minnesota. Their remains were turned over to MIAC 30 years ago, and we've been holding them ever since. We cannot return them to the Southwest because they want the burial materials that came with them that the university is still holding. So we are basically in a stalemate, and we're working with the university on that. Our ask or our justification for this year is that we're seeking $100,000 per year. We want to continue the lab operations that will ensure timely analysis, will reduce the project delays that our state agencies are facing as they move forward in trying to correct the problems. We are running almost at full capacity. We have right now three active burials projects going on. We have Arlington Avenue in Duluth. We have Highway 23 and Portage over by Bemidji, Minnesota. The 21 cases I talked about are human remains that we haven't been able to repatriate, and those are still in our custody, and we need to maintain and protect them in a secure and appropriate process or a place to until we are able to return them to their appropriate people. In addition to that, we get one or two cases a month where citizens bring in boxes of human remains. It's not uncommon to have somebody come in, knock on the door, drop a human skull off, say this came out of my grandfather's estate, you know, good luck, let us know how it goes, and then they take off. And this happens once or twice a month. The uncontrollable issue that we're facing is, of course, is one of the issues that we have is counties are developing roads because they have their own taxation now, in that they are still required to follow state law, and they are turning up a great deal of human remains as well as state projects are turning, and we need to figure out a process to help our counties, but as well protect and to repatriate those human remains that are uncovered. That's basically what I have to say, Madam Chair, on the request for continuing the osteology lab. Excuse me. I have Shannon Gijic with me, and Shannon will present on the Dakota Ojibwe language revitalization.
Ms. Gijic, if you would state your name for the record, and you can begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Shannon Gijic. I am the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and this is the first confirmation I have that I would be presenting today. I'm going to try to present and walk through the PowerPoint.
Show me with the switch button, please.
Okay, Ed Fairbanks stated earlier, I'm sorry, Representative Erdahl stated earlier, the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council has a history of receiving the language grants since the 2010 biennium. And these grants reach higher educational institutions, including tribal colleges, tribal nations, public schools, districts, and public schools, as well as charter schools, Native American community organizations, early childhood programs, and just last biennium we awarded the Minnesota Department of Education a grant. Part of the funds, not for the last biennium, but in the past, have gone to a volunteer language work group who has done magnificent work, and in the interest of time, I can take questions later about that or get any information. We are requesting funds for the volunteer work group this biennium. At this time, I'd like to have Mary Otto come up. Mary was instrumental as the Director of Indian Education for the White Earth Band, and a project that I'd like to highlight that was accomplished, a very successful project and first in Minnesota, actually, that was accomplished through the funds, through the legacy funds, is dual language signs in on the White Earth Reservation. It was a partnership between MnDOT, the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and the White Earth Nation.
Thank you, Ms. Gijic. Ms. Otto, if you would introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erdahl and members of the committee. My name is Mary Otto. I'm an enrolled tribal member of Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, White Earth Band. The legacy funds have played a crucial role in language revitalization throughout the whole state, but specifically the White Earth Reservation. Extremely proud to have been part of this project. I'm a former teacher, and my background is in education. Language is the heartbeat of our culture. Within it, our children learn values and their roles as Anishinaabe. Language gives us our identity as Native people. It tells the story of our lives in a way that no history lesson could ever provide. In the language, there is beauty and healing. It gives people hope. The dual language signs on White Earth Reservation that were made possible through the Minnesota Legacy Funds have, there's been just a ton of positive response via through our elder community councils. It's restoring hope in the fact that we're still here, and it's important that it's enforcing what our students are learning in the classroom through environmental print. Our students know what Walmart and McDonald's are, and so for them to be able to travel across the reservation and see their language, it just amplifies the importance of it. The signs have given identity to our reservation as a whole, and those visiting an awakening that as Native people, we are still here and we are not just historical figures. Language is the key to healing and restoring what was stripped away through the historical trauma that our families have endured. It's making our people strong again to thrive and making Minnesota strong as a whole. When we have visitors coming onto the reservation, we get Facebook posts, we get email requests, partnering with MnDOT and the Federal Highway, just having the opportunity to give back to our community, give back to our families. If you have any questions, thank you for listening to me today. Meet you.
Thank you, Ms. Otto, for your testimony, and thank you for the work that you do with and on behalf of our Indigenous communities, all of you. Representative Erdahl, did you have anyone else to testify?
No, I don't.
Okay. Questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Erdahl, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you all for listening to us today. I'd like to renew my motion that House File 1489 be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Erdahl renews his motion that House File 1489 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. I just kind of want to give you a little brief warning of our upcoming, I think Mr. Molzon is scheduled to, he'll email kind of an agenda, but I think after this, so we'll have one more week of a little bit of calm before the storm, and then the next week we're going to hear quite a few bills. So hopefully you, I think after some of these deadlines have passed, then we'll have a little window that we can actually do a lot of our stuff, I think, and not overlap with other committees. So that's kind of what we're hoping to do. So we'll go through quite a few bills. I think Representative Erdahl has about 17 of them. And so that'll be...
I can do one meeting.
Okay. Anyways, well, thank you.
Representative Green?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. I know I did get the email that we might be meeting Wednesday nights and some Fridays, which we are also doing on the Environmental Committee. So I realize the task before you is not going to be easy, but the more notice we can have is going to be better, because on those nights, I'll be bouncing back and forth between at least two, maybe three meetings.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Green, we're going to try to be very respectful as best we can. It's 2 weeks out, so hopefully some of these other committees will back off a little bit or be done with their kind of their work, and then we can unfortunately fill some of those voids. But again, we'll try to respect people's schedules, and hopefully we can get through and hear some great stories of works and projects that are out there.
Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, I just would like to say that Fridays could start at 8 o'clock, like every other day. And then maybe people Well, never mind.
Madam Chair, I've heard that. Maybe even I understand someone's even doing a 7:30 meeting.
Any other questions? Seeing no further questions, we are adjourned.